Like to welcome everybody to the July 18th, 2022 Bertie County Board of Commissioners meeting. LaShonda, can you do a roll call, please?
Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Vice Chair Ronald Wesson.
Present.
Commissioner Greg Atkins. Commissioner Tammy Lee.
Present.
Chairman John Trent.
Present.
Commissioner Ron Robertson.
Present.
County Manager Juan Bond II.
Present.
Finance Director William Robertson. Present. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Weston, can you lead us an invocation, pledge of allegiance, please?
Be happy to. Please join me in prayer, ladies and gentlemen. Heavenly Father and eternal God, Lord, we bow our heads in humble submission to your will. Father, we say thank you. Thank you for all of your many, many blessings, Lord God. Thank you for the rain. Crops are looking awful good out there right now, God. And, you know, we thank you for that blessing. You know, we thank you for this opportunity of service, especially for this board to serve the citizens of this county. It's a great opportunity and it's a great honor. We want to make sure that we do our very, very best to improve the quality of life here in Bertie. Lord, I ask you to give us that insight, give us that knowledge and strength and ability to work together to make sure that we do our very, very best to serve the citizens here. I ask you to bless the folks who showed up at this meeting, those who are listening by phone. But God, we know that we want all we do to be pleasing in your sight. We ask these blessings in your son, Jesus' name, we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Join me in the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you.
Public comments. Are there any public comments from the audience? Great to see everybody out here tonight. Joe, how are you? You're fine, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm here to address you. I thank you for the opportunity. First of all, I'm thankful for what y'all do to serve y'all in this county.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
The thing I've come to speak to you tonight about, I saw on the agenda we have item number 5, tethering the ordinance request to you tonight. I have a meeting, so I'll be here when that comes to the floor. But I just wanted to offer a few comments prior to that. I'm certain this is probably going to be requested not because of dogs outside in Bertie County. That's been an item of discussion for quite some time. It's not just something new. But there's more than one side to everything. You can't pay for everything with a broad stroke and expect it to cover everything. There's already rules in place to take care of animals. There's rules in place how often they have to be fed, how often their clean water being taken care of. Those rules are already there. What I'll offer you is, they're not going to follow the rules on the dog that's on the chain. They're not going to follow the rules if that dog's laying on the couch. If they're not going to take care of them, they're just not going to take care of them. How they're controlled is very minimal effect on that. It's the actual person themselves. What I would like to offer to you to consider before you make a decision on tethering is the fact that some dogs, and I've had dogs my whole life, down to one now, he sleeps next to me on the couch, but some dogs cannot be controlled in a pen, in a fenced-in area, chain link, even the nice chain link. Some dogs just cannot be contained in. I've got a chain link at home, the heavy gauge I can show you. Not a dog getting out, one trying to get in and chew right on through in just a couple of minutes. Had that dog been in a pen, in an enclosure, to be kept away from others and chewed out, what would the neighbors have to deal with? Now, that wasn't my dog. That was someone else's dog trying to get in my pen. some dogs cannot be held in a chain or even in any type of enclosure for that matter. Some will dig, some will climb, some will chew out, and they'll do it as quick as you can put them in. I know fellas right now have some of their dogs on chain. Now, the majority of them in pen, but they have to have some of them on chain because that's the only way they can tame them. The only way they can keep them from being a nuisance to others. And sometimes even the only way they can keep them from being a danger to their neighbors. We know we have animals in this, in your area, in this trend, these hogs and bears. If we don't have a way to control them, we got a mess. And a dog that'll grab a hog and hold him till you get there, you don't want that dog running across the yard and running up to your 5-6-year-old child or grandchild. Mm-mm. You just don't want it. And if you put them in a pen that they can be out of in 5 minutes, what's happening? What do we do? Do we start having that type of dog? That's been discussed before too. That's not an option either. That's not the right option. Every situation is unique. Some dogs need to be on chain. Yeah, I would love to see every dog sleeping on the rug by the front door on the inside of the house in the air conditioner. But we know that's not going to happen. We've got children. That aren't kept that well here in Berkeley County. We have children that are suffering from heat and not being taken care of, not being fed. So we know we're going to have some animals that's going to happen. You're probably going to be offered some horror stories tonight when this comes to the floor. I'm certain. I haven't heard any, but I'm certain you'll be offered some horror stories. But I submit to you that those same horror stories would have taken place regardless of how the animal is contained. If a person is not going to take care of them, they're not going to take care of them, regardless of the manner of containment. And some animals need to be contained in a way that is different than others. As long as that animal is being contained in an area that's suitable, they're being kept fresh water, being kept food, and they're being taken care of well, some shade, that animal will be just as well off, and in some instances will have more free range space than they would if they were contained in one of these little 10-10 kennels that you see. So sometimes that dog may even have a better life on that chain, and certainly a better life if it means that they could possibly be getting loose onto the neighbors and shot. Unfortunately, it happened. With BB guns, pellet guns, and then some even shot to be killed. And no fault of their own. So we don't have to put ourselves in that position to where we limit everything to this box, and this is the only way you can do it. And then the next thing you know, you've got a mess. You got to complain about the neighbor's dogs getting out, coming over, fighting the kids, or carrying the trash up.
Mr. Hoggard, I think we're at the 3 minutes now. So, but thank you. But thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you.
Okay. And thank you for coming, sir.
Yes, sir.
Any other 3 minute comments? There are no others. Going to the next line item, which would be line item 2. Introduction of elections director, Latoya Peel, by Chair Michael Freeman. Good evening.
I think we got one of the best directors in the state of North Carolina.
All right. All right. All right.
This is where I'm very proud.
Yeah.
Amen.
She worked down in Manor Dogs, this county, 04-06. Then she moved to Big County. I'm sorry. Worked at Big County. She did not move. Big County, But she was certified in election in 2010. I got to tell you, who's your service? The Tory Peel took the director's exam in 2010, certified in election. I also took the exam to be certified. I'm the first director to, I'm sorry, not director, I'm first board member in Bertie County to be certified in election.
Cool.
Well, I made 93 on the exam. Chest stuck out, head hung high, walked around like a peacock for 2 days. Got to talk to her. She made 99.
Oh, cool. Good job.
So I said, well, what did you do wrong? What happened? She said, well, I must have misspelled my name. So, no election, but she can't spell her name.
You. Thank you. Good evening. Good evening.
Most importantly, like Chairman Freeman said, thank you again, Chairman Freeman, for the wonderful words. It feels good to be back home.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because for 15 years when I was in Pitt County, I got so many compliments. Oh, Miss Penny, you so much for Pitt County citizens. You do this for Pitt County. But at the time, I started thinking, I need to do that for my own community.
That's right.
So I do thank you all today for having me in the meeting. I also thank our wonderful board members, Chairman Freeman, and and also my wonderful staff. Because elections is not just a one person job. It takes a team.
That's right.
So thank you again for that.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. We're glad to have you.
Glad to have you. Glad to have you, Miss Bill.
And we'll try not to worry you too bad. I'm sure Sinesta's giggled at that comment.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bill. All right, next up the bat is coming North Carolina DOT Updates Division Engineer, Mr. Wim Bridges. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you, sir.
I understand you got you a promotion.
Come on in.
Well, good this. They're all mixed up here, sir. Ronnie Sawyer, Division Maintenance Engineer, 28 years. Jack Liverman, Assistant Division Maintenance Engineer, 22 years. Andy Division, Division Construction Engineer, 28. Gretchen Byram, Division Project Development Engineer, is not able to be with us today. She is 30 and is going home in December.
Is she? Oh, Brandy, bless her heart.
So she'll be going home in December. Craig Midget, Planning Engineer, for 4 years. Michael Hill, District Engineer, there you go. 44. Brad Johnson, County Maintenance Engineer for Northern part of County.
Oh, Brad.
Andy Motor, County Maintenance Engineer for Southern part of County. And Martin, 30-ish, right? Close enough to 30 to call it 30. So with about over 180 years, I got 31 and a half. 180-some years of DOT experience. We appreciate the opportunity to come and talk. I know it's been a while since we've been here before you with budget and COVID and DOT's changing and whatnot. And we came every year and talked about the secondary roads program. Well, when that dried up and died, there was not much to come talk about. but I believe each of you have a handout. I'm going to get through the first couple of pages. If you proceed to page 4,
Oh, we got phone numbers. Woohoo!
This is Tuesday Friday. Bridge program problem. First, PT1R004 on 1219 Francis Steel Road. Bridge number 9. Estimated cost $1 billion. That date was 7-6. Randy, what's the status of that award? That's that project has been awarded and work will begin. Most of these contractors on these bridges, I'll explain this. They may have 18 months to do the work and leave the contract, but a lot of these small contracts like this, there's 18 months to decide to start, but then there's a, what, Randy? 3-4 months, maybe?
Yeah.
And once they start, they have like 3 to 4 months to do the work. So the road's not closed for 18 months. If they have a window to work, and then when they move in, they got to get in and get out. So the second one is Bridge 24, NC 1100 Shire River.
That is just north of Lewiston. The river there just by the treatment plant next to the cemetery at Lewiston. That one is designed, is currently underway with an anticipated let date of January 21, 2025. Bertie, two bridges on 1246 and Sheriff Garrett Road. One to be let in April and one in May of 2026 with a cost of approximately $500,000 a piece. Now, I would like to clarify, you said estimated cost. Y'all are working with county budgets. You know how these days it's catching a BB in the dark, right? I mean, it's a never moving target. I like to say these estimates are now written in pencil because they're 510 today. Tomorrow, they won't be that. Next week, they probably won't be that. So we will be working with them, attempting to keep them contained, keep them on schedule in all consideration of any budgetary constraints that we receive. Project schedule, other project schedule for delivery. R5809A, Bertie County, NC 45.
Ooh.
Modernized NC 45 from the Washington County line to US 17 at Midway. Two 11-foot lanes, a 2-foot paved shoulder, and any drainage needs, high visibility pavement markings, things like that, just to safe up the road. It's not adding lanes. It's not widening in any appreciable amount. But two 11-foot lanes with a 2-foot paved shoulder was an attempt to eliminate the drop-offs that you have on a lot of these roads around here.
Maybe we'll keep tractor-trailers from turning over.
That's right. It keeps them on the road and keeps from having those places where they're all the time beating the shoulder right. And Andy and Brad have always had to go out there and be patching up the shoulder to keep the shoulder safed up. That was actually, this is part of a three-part. This project, you may have remembered, been RPO. This was introduced as one long project from the Hertford County line all the way to the Roanoke River. It was too big to bite off at one time, so it was broken into three. We've already done the piece north of Colerain.
That's right.
This is the piece south of Midway. And let's go back to, with a target let date of June of 2023. So that's, you know, with, if everything stays on schedule, that's within 12 months.
So south of 17?
That'd be south of 17 to
Washington County.
The Three Rivers Bridge, essentially. The first thing somebody's going to ask, what are you going to do about that mess between shipyard and the river? I don't know yet. We're still trying to figure that out.
It's like riding a roller coaster.
Look, if we had figured that out, we'd have figured it out long before I even started with you. But it's just a nightmare that exists all over our highway division is the undulation and the settlement of the there's just no subgrade to put it on, but we're going to do our best to address it. The next one is the other piece of 45, which is from Midway north to Colerain. That will be essentially the same project, two 11-foot lanes, 2-foot paved shoulders, drainage concerns. Essentially what it's doing is trying to ease the curves, straighten it out, give you a little bit wider pavement. Even though the lanes won't be any wider, you'll have a 2-foot paved shoulder, which gives you a little more room, and you don't have the white line running right down the edge of the pavement and then dirt and grass. So the intent of that one's $13.6 million, hopefully lit in June of 2025. So the piece south of Midway, June of 23, 2 years later, all things go well, we'll let this one in June of 25. Various safety projects going on through the county. The first one on 11 and 42, add rumble strips on 11 and 42 between 903 and Martin County and Indian Woods Road. So rumble strips on the edges to wake you up if you start to leave the pavement. 308 between Windsor and Lewiston Woodville, install rumbles and centerline rumble stripes, upgrade the signs to current best practices along the corridor. So Windsor to Lewiston, more rumble strips to help people stay inside the pavement. 308 between Griffin's Quarter Road and Bertie County and 258 Northampton County, same thing. Install shoulder and centerline rumbles, upgrade the signs, and to meet current best practices. And all of those, well, one is in August of 22, and then two of them are in July of 23. Projects that are currently under construction. You've seen this, no doubt, many times over the last several years, wheelchair ramp construction going on in various municipalities all over the county. You'll see that right now there's a contract that is already under contract. Michael Hill's office is administering this contract. 21 ramps in Orlando, one in Coleraine, six in Kelford, and 11 in Lewiston. It's to bring the intersections up to Americans with Disabilities Act standards in accordance with a federal highway mandate that we bring all these up to standards. So we have been doing this over the years. Federal Highway has been giving us funds each year called TAP funds. I won't tell you what TAP stands for. Why not? I don't have a clue. TAP, it's an acronym. I don't know. As long as they send the money, I don't ask. So that's what's going on right now. That will be underway at a completion date of less than a year from now. So these should be going on imminently. Near and dear to everybody's heart is resurfacing. What I want to explain about this, you see it says contract years 21, 22, and 23. That doesn't necessarily mean that the roads in that contract are paved in 21, 22, and 23. What it means is we let our contracts in the spring and the fall. We break them up, let them up about 6 months. Well, not 6 months apart, but we let them in spring and fall. Spring have an availability date of July. Fall will have availability date of the next year, correct? Okay. Those numbers represent the year the contract was let or awarded to the contractor. The contractors usually have approximately 18 months to complete the work. So you might have something let in 21, in June of 21, you're going to have 18 months to finish. Then there's going to be others are going to be let. So they're always overlapping and always extenuating. So you may have a contract to move in with four contracts, and he may work on this contract this week, that contract next week, go back to the next one the week before. So just because those dates are there, that doesn't mean that year. That just means when it was let. Here's some US 1317. That one's already been completed. That NC 305 map has already, south of Burden Fire Lane, has already been completed. Woodard Road's completed. Askeville Road's completed. North Academy and West Academy and Coleraine is completed. US 1317 out by the golf course headed out of Windsor. That one's under contract. That has not started yet. NC 305, another section that's completed from right, essentially from Rice's Mill intersection, headed back toward Charles Taylor Road. Charles Taylor Road and Francis Mill is under contract, not completed. Conoritza Road and Center Grove are under contract, but not completed. Charles Taylor, Hexaline, and Wakeland, same way. This table represents pavement preservation. We didn't even try to map this. If you'll see, every one of those represents a road. It would be so busy, there was no point. But every one of y'all has this. You have that table so you can look and see what's going on. The first section is fiscal year 22 to 23. That's thin lift. That's the stuff you see us do in subdivisions and highly residential areas. The usually about 3/4 of an inch to an inch of plant mix. Not the big stuff you see on the bigger rights, but the subdivision work. Second one is secondary crack sealing. That speaks for itself. It's crack sealing. You see us pour the cracks. People ask, what in the world are you doing this for? Crack sealing, thin lift, and AST, which used to be BST, which everybody thinks is rock and tar. Nobody loves it. Everybody despises it. It's a tool in our toolbox, and we have to use it. All of those essentially represent the same thing. You paint, reason you use those is the same reason you paint your house. You paint your house to keep the water out so the board don't rot. All of these seal the water out of the pavement and out of the subgrade under it to buy you time to save the road. Now, I was questioned at another county commissioner's meeting, rock and tar, AST, BST. Why don't you just pave it? That right there costs about a third per mile of regular plant mix. So when you need to seal it up, you need to use every tool you have. We could not maintain our system if we put full-blown resurfacing on every right we had. It's much like it's a compromise. Y'all have to make it in county government. We have to make it here. So that's the reason you have these different treatments. People complain about the BST, but it is a tool and it is a value. And if you try to explain, it keeps the water out of the pavement and out from under the road. Because once water gets under the road, you know what happens.
Yep.
It completely will come apart, disintegrate. Then you've gone from coating it on top to digging it up, if you can afford to dig it up. Another list, Bertie County is a big county, so you got a lot of lists. And that concludes our formal presentation. Now, we will be glad to, any questions that the commissioners have, we'd be glad to entertain them if we can. If not, we'll take some notes and go back and hunt it down and get back to you.
No real questions other than to tell you that the men that work for you, they do an excellent job.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to tell you now.
We'd love to hear it.
Every time I've called them, mm-hmm. they return the call. And before I know it, they're out making the repair. Well, or they send an engineer out. Mike, I appreciate everything you do for Bertie County.
Yeah.
Okay. And the rest of you gentlemen, because I know y'all are out there taking care of it. The other thing is, I want to thank DOT for what they've done for the farmers in West Bertie County, reference Weeping Mary Road. Okay. That was a major deal over there. Mm-hmm. I think people have seen on the news for the last 5 or 6 years, farmers being flooded out, losing crops, millions of dollars worth of damage, and renovation of that road over there is coming right along.
We appreciate that. Your representatives, I met out there with multiple all at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want anybody to have any super false hope about what's going on. I wish I was raising that thing about this high,
mm-hmm.
but it's not. It's impossible. But what we're going to do is try to safe it up, widen it a little bit, put a good bed of stone on it. Mm-hmm. We're installing some pipelines at some critical locations. So when the river gets up, we can flow some of that flood across there. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be able to stop the river from mm-hmm. overtopping Weeping Mary Road.
Right.
It's just where it is in that floodplain, it's going to happen. As long as you had your public hearings here, we all know where mm-hmm. that went. As long as the Corps is having to maintain those impoundments that mm-hmm. they are, and they have regulations which require them to do certain things. And as long as that's happening, water will be in that floodplain and we'll deal with it. But our intent is to assist with some drainage and put a decent rock bed on it so that it's easier to maintain and hopefully easier to restore if we do have an overtime.
Well, I think it's a start.
It is.
Okay.
It is.
And, you know, for the years that it flooded 2 years ago when we had 3 years straight of flooding out there, I think it was averaging like $100,000+ a year in repairs just to Weeping Mary Road. And that doesn't include the other roads that were going in there, but it is a start.
It is.
And we got some eyes there. There's enough news and things of that nature and people coming to meetings in reference to that. And so I want to give kudos when I can. It may not cure it, but it's going to help.
Well, we will take the money wherever we can get it.
Absolutely.
We will spend it.
When my district is Askerville, Windsor includes down what we call the neck. Wooded Road, right. Morning Road. And, you know, after the tornado, mm-hmm. when the roads got really torn up, not just by the tornado, but heavy trucks coming in trying to do the repairs. You know, a lot of folks were calling the county, and you know, we called your office, and the office said, Ron, we understand, we're going to get to it, but we need to make sure that we get all of the trucks out yeah. of the way first before we come in and try to do something and pave it. And we gave that message back to citizens, and they believed us. And you guys came through just like you said you right. would. And I can tell you, it made a real difference, too. You know, even though there are people still struggling down there trying to get repairs, the roads look great.
Well, thank you.
And you did a great job in doing it, and we really appreciate that. The only other question I have is, do you know what the status of the interstate is now, the proposed interstate? Any new information to share with us on that?
Okay. It wasn't put in there on purpose.
I know, sure.
I know.
I-87 is a drive that DOT has not stopped pushing for I-87. You don't see it in the Bertie County presentation, but you see it in Martin, Chowan, Quimmins, past Tank up that way. You'll see that we are spending interstate maintenance money, which is not, it's not I-87 money, so to speak. But when we're working on those, we're working on those to make them interstate ready. Make improvements as much as we can to make them full interstate standards. Even though they may be 70 miles an hour, that doesn't mean they're interstate standards. Sure. So we're doing improvements to those sections that are like that. We all know, and you don't have to ride from Williamston to Windsor but once to realize that if you look at the entire I-87 corridor, that's the hard part. Bertie County is the hard part because you're not going to build I-87 out there in the river bottom down there in the refuge. I mean, you're not going to put it where it is. You're not going to just widen those lanes and build an interstate. But DOT is still working on that. I-87 has to compete in the STIP, the Strategic Transportation Improvement Program. And those of you who have sit through RPO meetings know that acronym all too well. You have to compete. To compete, it's legislated. The criteria that you compete with are legislated. And you have to compete statewide for money like I-87 because the division pot of money that we get is not enough to build I-87 because you have 14 counties competing for 24, 5, 6, something. Each division gets $24, $25 million of division money. Well, we got to spend that in 14 counties. You can't build an interstate with that in 14 counties. But DOT is working. Myself and Gretchen Byram, state traffic engineer Kevin Lacey. I don't know who else. Did anybody else in here go with me to Virginia? Okay. We went and met with the Hampton Roads DOT district, my equivalent in Hampton Roads, and with the Hampton Roads Transportation Planning Group. We spent about 2.5 hours talking about connectivity between Eastern North Carolina and Tidewater, Virginia. 168, 17, 13, 32, 258, all of them. They realized that their economic engine is Eastern North Carolina. We realized that our economic engine is Tidewater. And there's a meeting coming up whenever they plan it, of the economic movers and shakers in Tidewater and the economic movers and shakers in Northeastern North Carolina and VDOT and NCDOT to get together and talk about the mutual benefits of those two entities coming together. And once those two entities start pulling together, they can go to Raleigh, Richmond, Washington, and have a voice that might get some more traction. So I-87 is not gone. But I-87 is still, every time you go to RPO meeting and they call for projects, put it on the list.
Oh, yeah.
Put it on
the
list.
Oh, yeah.
Put it on the list. It may not score well enough to make it, but right. Don't ever stop putting it on the wish list.
I mean, we know how important it is to the future of this yes, community. Yes, it is. Right? We really need that. But when we go and talk to the people in Raleigh, they say, well, you know, technically it's been approved, but it hasn't been funded. So that's a difference between the two of that.
I mean, right? And that was a major hurdle, was to get it designated.
Right.
That was a big deal to get the feds to say, here to here to here is future I-87. I mean, that was a major accomplishment. Now you have to get the projects on the ground. Right. And well, RPO is the only place right now to do it, unless some federal grant comes along to do it. The only method we have is to steal.
So I serve on the RPO for the county commissioners, and we've been advised to break that project up into smaller projects to...
That's correct.
Okay. Yes. All right. Yes. So we are doing correct, because we'll soon be meeting as a county.
I won't drag this out. I'll tell you. Over in Hartford, I-87 goes through Orion, Hartford. I don't care how you put it, but it's going through Hartford somehow. Two of those locations, there's two smaller I-87 projects, are two interchanges, one at Wind Fork and one at Harvest Point Road. It's a future interchange. But what they've done is broke it out, and we got an issue there anyway. So if we're going to fix it, let's go on and fix this little piece to interstate standards. So, yes, anything you can break it up into something that's, you can't eat an elephant all in one bite. You got to break it down and eat it one bite at a time. So figure out how to break that elephant down and just keep working on it. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to cast darkness. It's not going to happen in my career. I got 31 and a half years. It's not going to happen in my career. But somebody just needs to keep toting the flag.
Mr. Wynn, you have a great staff.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The guys here, I work with some of them. But they does a super job, because people call me because the relationship and the employment that I had with DOT. But because of tenure, 30 years here, 20 years there, Mr. Hill, 30 years. How many years you guys got? Yeah. Been around a long time, and y'all work real good together. And I'm just glad to be a part of that.
I've said the executive staff at the division office have all served about the entire career in Division One. And we've all grown up together.
That's right.
We all started about the same time.
That's right.
We've grown up together.
That's
right. We know each other. And I don't know there's any other division in the state of North Carolina that's got that much continuity in it.
That's right.
That came from cradle to retirement.
That's right.
I would just like to say I'm sorry for y'all's loss, Sterling Baker.
Yeah.
It was a great service. The gentleman from out of town that did part of the service,
Anthony,
he did an outstanding job.
Former division engineer.
Yeah, he did an outstanding job. So, yeah, I'm sorry for y'all's loss. It was a tremendous loss for DOT. Right. I would just like to echo, some of your guys are on speed dial with me. Some of them, Mr. Johnson, it's great to finally see you in person. I've emailed you several times. And so it's great to finally get to see you in person. But thank you for all that you do and your quick response when we email, because we're not emailing or calling because we want to. It's because we've had a concern a citizen.
That's right.
So we're very appreciative.
Our biggest thing is strive to give you an answer. It may not be yes, but at least it's an answer.
Right. That's fine.
That works fine.
It's no and a reason why it's no. But at least a response.
Well, that's fine. That works out perfect for me.
Yeah,
that's right. Because I just call the people back and I let them know what the situation is and what the response is.
We'll tell you no, but we'll tell you why.
The worst thing is not getting back at all.
Right.
And you guys don't do that. You do call back.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. And we're going to make it a habit of coming back. So we're going to, we won't be as long coming as we have been coming.
It's been a long COVID season.
It's been a long time.
That'd be good.
Thank you.
Take care. All right, number four on the agenda, Trillium Annual Report from Bland Baker. Mr. Baker, how you doing?
I'm good.
He talked about all the people he brought with him. About me or whatever, but anyway, I do appreciate the opportunity to come. I'm here every year. I did want to say one thing before I start. I'd actually had a call from Commissioner Robertson about the possibility of Bertie County putting their designee in the place of a commissioner on our board. And so even though our bylaws do say that the commissioners appoint a commissioner and one other appointee based on criteria, it also says the commissioners can appoint their designee in the place of a commissioner. So I just wanted to say that Trillian would be in support of that.
Okay.
If that, whenever y'all decide to discuss that.
That's right. Okay. That's right.
And am I going to have to work this?
You can do it, Mr. Blair.
All right. Okay. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here, Mr. Chairman, and members of the commissioners. Just in review, we now have 28 counties. We added two counties since I was here before. That's Halifax County and Bladen County. And that was just based on the counties having the opportunity to request to change their managed care organizations, and they chose to come with Trillium, and we agreed, and the division agreed as well. So that's how we moved to 28 counties. So last year we served 58,000 people. The cost of those services was roughly $476 million. We continue to manage a network of providers around 500. So it seems like every time I've been here for the last two or more years, we've been talking about Medicaid transformation. I'm still talking about it, and my apologies about that, but it's but it is moving forward. So just in the way of review, effective July 1, we had five insurance companies that responded to an RFP from the division to manage the mild and moderate behavioral health symptoms of individuals. Those were, a lot of those folks were folks that used to be under Trillium and then now belong to these are statewide plans. So every Medicaid recipient was allowed to, the ones that were that qualified for a standard plan could register with any one of those insurance companies that they wanted to, so statewide. So they were not limited to that. So that went into effect July 1. So there have been some bumps, I think, but I think that the division has worked hard in making sure that the transitions have been made. So I think it's certainly better than it has been. So how that affects Trillium and the other five MCOs, we actually were the only companies that were allowed to submit a bid for the tailored plan. So we were awarded one of the tailored plans, and our go-live date is December 1, 2022. The big difference for Trillium now is that in addition to providing the behavioral health services for the moderate to severe individuals with those types of behaviors, we're also going to be managing the pharmacy benefits. And we're going to be managing the physical health care as well, which is something that's new for us. So we've got over 2,000 pharmacies across these 28 counties. We've got a contract with every one of them. So, because we want to be sure that all of our consumers that we are supporting can continue to go to their same doctor for their flu shot or their same doctor for their psychiatric meds or whatever services they're getting. So we are in the process of working through those contracts and contracting with those primary care physicians as well as any specialists that are in all of our 28 counties. It is an open network, and we are trying to contract with every single one of those because we don't want any of our consumers not to be able to continue to see who they're currently seeing. So basically, I guess the biggest benefit from this Medicaid transformation is that I got one card. I can see my psychiatrist. I can see my general practitioner for my flu shot. I can go to my pharmacy and I get my medicine, whether it's an antibiotic or whether it's my psychiatric meds. And I can also get any other types of mental health services that I need to fall under my plan. I can use my card. So you got one provider that's managing all of those services, which makes sense to me. So I need to update the slide, but we actually had our readiness review last week. So we had sent in reams and reams and reams of paper on new policies and procedures and how we are going to implement the tailored plan, because there are lots of differences than what we are currently doing. So we've been doing that for a year. And we had been submitting that information. They have They have approved all that. They were here last week for our desk review, our on-site review. We should have the results of those in mid-August. And hopefully by December 1st, 2022, we'll be able to implement the tailored plan. We'll be able to move forward. So just some quick changes that we've had to go through in order to satisfy the tailored plan. We've got, you know, we all always have had a crisis line. We'll continue to operate that crisis line. That hasn't changed. So we also got to have a pharmacy line for anybody that has any questions about your medication. And we'll have someone that will man that line that will be able to answer those questions. We've got to have a provider line. So if there's any provider that's got any question about any claims that they have that aren't being paid or how to submit a claim or what to do, there's a line especially for providers. There's a nurse line for any kind of medical issues that any of our consumers may be having with the medication they may be taking or any questions around a medication. We've got that nursing line to be able to answer those questions. So got all those lines that are going to be running all at the same time.
Mr. Baker, yes. Are y'all part of the 988 rollout? Will y'all be answering those calls as well?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think it depends. And I think it depends on what the county, sometimes about what the county decides, how they're going to incorporate that. But there's another county that I have right now that's incorporating, talking about that 988 number and how they can let me say it this way.
And you might want to explain what 988
it went effective July 16th, I believe is when it is. It's behavioral health crisis call goes through that 988 number and it's routed to each of the counties. The one thing that Trillium doesn't want to happen is that we have a no wrong door policy. So we don't want somebody to have to call 988 if they can call our mobile crisis number directly. And I don't mean Trillium, but call the mobile crisis provider that has their number out there that they can call them and they can get what help they need without going through 988. I want to be sure that is also an option. But absolutely, and I think even now, the 988 number, when they get calls that come through 988, they are reaching out to our mobile crisis provider as well. Okay. So we're already tied.
Good.
To that number.
I'm sure we'll be hearing some more about that this week.
Yeah. To answer your question? Yeah.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. So the other big change for Trillium is this care management, a whole brand new platform. And it's based on the whole person care. So it's one person, everybody, this is a good change. Everybody who is under the tailored plan will have a care manager, every single person. And that person will manage their wellness visits for their physician. They will manage any kind of physical therapy types of visits they need, any kind of care, behavioral health, or physical or otherwise, they can help support them in whatever they actually need. So I always worry, one, when I need to give out some naloxone kits, so I call him and I give them to him, and then he gets them delivered wherever they need to be, whether it's law enforcement or whether it's EMS or ever how that works. So we continue to try to provide those kits when we can, when we get money and we can purchase them. So one of the things I wanted to mention, because it does affect Berkshire County specifically, is that we do have some mobile clinics that have been some of our projects. We had a mobile clinic in Perquimans County. This has been about 2 years now that has been so successful. They're doing substance use treatment out of that mobile clinic. They are doing some outpatient treatment out of that clinic over in Perquimans County. So we got a little bit more money and we decided what better way to meet people where they are in the community, not in the big towns, but maybe at some crossroad or where there are not that many providers or they may have a hard time getting to those services. So we did purchase kits, clinics. We contracted with two or three providers And we've just added Bertie County.
Oh, cool.
And that mobile clinic is going to be run by Monarch. It is still being built. So just be looking for, when we get closer to it being ready, that I will certainly want to bring that mobile clinic to Bertie County and get some input from you all about where you think it might work, just to advertise it, to have a ribbon cutting, to have people tour the particular clinic. And one of the other things that we're hoping, because of the tailored plan, and we'll be more responsible for physical health, we're hopefully going to be able to do some wellness checks to add that to what the services are that are going to be provided. And of course, they'll have a nurse, a clinician, and either a nurse practitioner or a psychiatrist. Or that might be through telemed, but at least they will be available to consult with medication management. So we're kind of excited about that because, this can go in places where a provider might not be interested in setting up shop, but they can, and they can be in more than one place in that month, depending on maybe what the need is of that county. So I just did want to mention that. So for Bertie County in closing, we served 678 individuals last year. 530 of those were mental health. 165 of those were substance use, and 76 of those were intellectual and developmental disabilities. I just wanted to mention, in addition to the mobile clinics for Bertie County, we actually have added a few new services for Bertie County in the last 6 months to a year that I wanted to be sure that you were aware of, so that you know of what our efforts are for Bertie County. So, as you know, substance use is always a need. There ain't never enough providers. It's just not enough. And we actually have contracted with a provider to add substance abuse comprehensive outpatient treatment program. And it's a group, it's evidence-based, and it's a group that meets 3 or 4 days a week. They come in and there's a case management component to it. Usually there's a peer support person that's associated with that group that can help support in this of folks that have lived experience. So they are a big help to those individuals. We added community support team, which is another adult service that is more geared toward folks with more severe mental illness, bipolar disorder, those types of illnesses. It is a team approach. It is an approach where they go to the people's homes as opposed to making them come into an appointment. They have a nurse. They have other individuals on that team that are required by the state. So,
how do you get somebody enrolled in that?
Well, they just have to have a referral. That's it. Either through Trillium, or if they know the provider, they can call the provider directly.
Okay.
So, and if somebody needs some help with that, just give me a call.
We're communicating here. We know what we're communicating.
Right. And then in terms of children's services, just briefly, we've been working and already have a school-based therapist in the school system in Bertie County, and their comprehensive interventions. And they are a new provider, not to the area, but they are new to the school and they are choosing to work with them, and their things are going well, I think. In addition to that, we've added day treatment, which is another service specifically for school-age kids that are difficult to manage in the school setting, and it can be licensed within the school or it can be in a separate building, but they get referrals and they spend a certain amount of their day in the day treatment program, but they still have to satisfy their academic requirements as well. So that's the services we've added. One other thing I'll say, and then I'm gonna be out of here. So in addition to the substance use, all of these were Medicaid billable services. And our state money has been very tight this year because they cut us even more, $5.3 million last year. And as you know, that's what we use to pay for services for individuals who are indigent, who have no insurance. We were able to add a state-funded contract for that substance use services as well. So we don't have a lot of those because we don't have the money to pay for them to. And one of the other things that we're encouraging providers to do, we do have a certain percentage of people in our communities that are indigent. Some of them have never applied for Medicaid because they don't either know how or don't have anybody to show them, but the providers are being encouraged to help support those individuals to go to DSS and help teach them how to apply for Medicaid so they have access to that funding stream that would free up the other dollars for maybe people who really don't qualify for Medicaid, and we could use that money for them. So are there any questions for me?
Go ahead.
Glenn, you know, you and I know each other pretty well.
I was going to say, you going to ask me about, we don't have enough beds.
No, I know the answer to that. But
we've been doing it. We've been asking this for 10 years.
But here's the thing I want to know. You know, the new gun violence legislation that the feds just passed has a lot of money in the billions for what they're calling community-based mental health services, right? I know that money has not even hit the state yet, right. So it's not come, but it's going to be the largest infusion of mental health dollars in the history of the United States. So when they say community-based, my major concern is that it is truly community-based, not just run by the states, but run by local communities, counties in particular, and municipalities, and that we need a voice in how that money is going to be spent. Nobody knows the needs of this community any better than the people living.
Absolutely.
So we want to have a voice when that money comes down in terms of how it's spent.
Sure.
And let me say a couple of other things. We were one of the, Berkeley County was one of the original litigants in the opioid settlement. Mm-hmm. We just received our first check. Why and how long ago? How many weeks? A few weeks ago, right? Now we've got to spend that money on mental health and emotional health related kinds of things, right? Primarily, you know, opioid and that kind of thing. So here's just an idea. Why wouldn't Trillium look at matching the dollars that we're getting for opioid so we can use that money right here? Our money has to be spent in Berkeley County.
Sure, yeah.
So if we're getting $60,000 or we're getting $50,000, what about the idea of Trillium matching our money so we could put it to use, whether that's hiring a professional or bed space or whatever we might want to do here to help citizens in this county? You know, I mean, it could be a Suboxone clinic, it could be whatever it needs to be. But the main thing that I'm saying is that I want local input and control of what happens here in this county, because we're going to do right by our folks.
Sure.
And we know what the needs are. But so often somebody makes a decision up here saying, hey, you need a playground.
Right.
I don't need a $300,000 playground. We had just built one and we were, I won't say forced, but we were told here's money for a playground. That money could have been spent someplace else, more important here in this community. So I'm just saying, and when I look at even like Port Human Services that covers a lot of the counties around us, there are so many people leaving professionals. I know in the last 12 months, we've had 3 psychiatrists to leave, right? Retire, not running away from us, but retire. Sure. And it's very difficult to find professionals out here unless we're able to pay them more to come here than they can get going to Wake County or Mecklenburg County or someplace else, right? To work. So, you know, we've got to solve problems like how can we get qualified people to work here, especially if this money is coming down for community-based health centers. We're going to have to man them with qualified people, and we can't even hold on to the people that we have now, right? So, I mean, those are some of the concerns I have, but I'd like to know when you come back to let us know how that money is going to be spent when it comes down from the feds, because it's going to be a once in our lifetime opportunity.
Sure.
Okay. Be glad to.
Thanks, man.
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baker. All right. Tethering ordinance requests, Ms. Northcott.
This up here.
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Good evening.
Thank you for allowing me to address the board. This opportunity is very much appreciated. My name is Beth Hassel Northcott. I live sort of in the middle of nowhere, outside of Hosky, not quite in Center Grove, not quite in Pilesville. So that's where I live now. How many of us have cat, dog, horses, bird, anything? Yep, me too. 68% of American households, that's roughly 6 out of 10 households, includes a pet, just one. Me, I have a little sign in my office that says cats are like potato chips. You can't have just one. So now with the way inflation is, 1 out of every 6 Americans is living in poverty, and so are their pets. But pets have been shown to improve our physical health. And as Mr. Baker probably could attest, probably our mental health as well. As community members, I feel that we have a responsibility to help ensure that our pets are protected and healthy. And as community leaders, we look to you and to our law enforcement for that help. I'm sorry Mr. Hoggard had to leave. I did run out in the hall and meet him quickly. He was a little presumptuous in what I was going to say, but that's okay. Maybe he and I can get together and talk about it another time. And I'm also sorry to hear he was relinquished to just sleeping on the couch. So maybe he gets to take the dog and sleep in the bed too. The FBI and the National Sheriff's Association have both recognized a connection between animal abuse and other crimes. In case you didn't see the front page of the paper, I've given you a copy. The dog that's pictured on there is a dog who survived. Not the one that died from starvation, but that's a survivor. And you can count every rib and vertebrae that that dog has. I'm not bringing you any new sad stories. It was right there on the front page of the paper. Cruelty includes killing, injuring, torturing, neglecting, like not providing food, water, overworking or abandoning an animal. And sadly, most cases go unreported. Recently, a Currituck County man was arrested for animal cruelty. The tip came on 7-3. They investigated on 7-3 and they made an arrest on 7-7. I dare say it took that long because it was a holiday weekend. I just don't understand why it took Bertie County 4 months to do this investigation and make an arrest. That was a really long time that maybe the other animals that this person had suffered. To tackle this, I spoke to Skip Dunlow, Bertie's chief animal control officer, PETA, Sheriff Holly, incoming Sheriff Ruffin, Joanne Jones from Paul's of Hertford County, Diane Cohen from Bertie's Humane Society, Dr. Cheryl Powell, the only vet in the county. I then branched out to animal control officers in Northampton, Hertford, Gates, Halifax, Martin, and Vance counties. I spoke with the Animal Legal Defense Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, the UNC School of Government, the North Carolina Department of Agriculture, North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, and the director of Halifax County's Health Department. See, in some counties, animal control falls under health department rather than the sheriff's department. More than 20 counties out of North Carolina's 100 counties and numerous municipalities have adopted their own tethering ordinances because North Carolina laws are really outdated and lacking. More than 23 states and the District of Columbia have laws regarding tethering. I called Sheriff Holly, who was very generous with his time. He explained what happened in the cruelty investigation. And then I also spoke with Skip Dunlow. When I asked Mr. Dunlow for any suggestions on how to improve animal welfare in our county, he said that people just didn't care enough. Well, I do. It seems that PETA and the Bertie County Sheriff's Office may not have the best working relationship, and that doesn't help anyone. PETA has a low-cost spay-neuter program that Paul's of Hertford County really takes advantage of. PETA does offer education at the farmers market in Windsor on Fridays. They offer free dog houses, straw bedding in the winter. They do have a reputation that was severely tarnished in our county about a decade ago, but I think it's time we look forward. In speaking with incoming Sheriff Ruffin, he did say he'd be looking over all the departments when he begins his new position, and him being a former canine police officer, that makes me hopeful that animal welfare will be important to him. Next, I spoke with Dr. Cheryl Powell. As our only resident vet, she sees the lack of education as our biggest obstacle. Dr. Powell said that when children grow up with minimal care to them or to their animals, the cycle continues. She said, if the officials don't seem to care, how do we get the people to follow? North Carolina's spay and neutering program is intended to reduce the overpopulation of unwanted cats and dogs. This program is part education and part monetary assistance for the counties. All counties are eligible for reimbursement of the direct cost to spay and neuter dogs and cats. Our state has one of the highest euthanasia rates in the country. In 2021, we ranked 42nd out of 50th. That's pretty far down the bottom tier regarding animal protection, according to the Animal Legal Defense Fund. I've included a page there in your handout. Going back to our neighbor, Martin County, I found there are 21 pages of animal laws. And in Bertie County, the only thing I could find after a lot of research was the SOP for animal welfare during emergencies. That was 3 pages. Martin has had a tethering ordinance since 1989. Chief Deputy Drew Robinson said that they absolutely take advantage of the state's low cost and neuter program. He said that owners are given the chance to make the living conditions for their pets better, to bring it up to acceptable levels. And if not, the DA's office is very supportive and they're very successful in the courts. He said just in this last quarter, his county alone spayed or neutered 44 cats and 21 dogs. That's a lot in a quarter. Just this morning, I again spoke with Mr. Dunlow and Ms. Cowan. I wanted to double check my information. And Bertie Animal Control did not know if the animal shelter in Bertie County took advantage of the state's low-cost spay and neuter program. The Animal Control Department itself does not utilize this program. Apparently, the animal shelter tried, but were told it must go through DSS. In doing my research, I found that a pet owner merely has to show they're a recipient of the Department of Health and Human Services, and they are going to already have a copy of the pet owner's income information on record, and then they can get a voucher that can be attained to use by a vet or a clinic that's not even in the county to get their animals spayed or neutered. This is free money that a county like Bertie could certainly utilize, I think. Animal Control Officer Frankie Nobles of Vance County was thrilled that his county just this year received tens of thousands of dollars in grant money from companies like Petco and nonprofits like the Humane Society. His county doesn't have any tethering laws, but he says they're very successful in the courts with any cruelty cases. According to Bertie County Animal Control, they have never looked into obtaining any grant money. I have a proposal there. You have it in your handout as well. I've drafted the proposal, which I hope the board will sincerely consider adopting as a countywide animal welfare ordinance. This is not anti-tethering. This is an animal welfare ordinance. I have given you copies to follow along as I read. The first one, establish a tip hotline to report abuse. The state has one, and it's for wildlife also, but I'm talking about right here in our county. Form a citizens ad hoc committee, which I will volunteer to be on or to lead, to take a deep dive into ways of improving animal welfare in Bertie. I would like to utilize the state's low-cost spay-neuter program robustly. Hold rabies clinics across the county. Develop an educational plan for animal owners. Adopt a tethering ordinance. And the tethering ordinance I have says a tether would be would be a minimum of 10 feet made of metal, not to be more than 1/8 the weight of a dog. In other words, none of these big logging chains that we see on dogs sometimes. It must have a swivel on both ends. The dog must be at least 4 months of age to be tied out. The tether not placed around the dog's neck. The tether must allow a reasonable and unobstructed range of motion without the possibility of entanglement, strangulation, or other injury. The tether must allow the dog access to adequate food, water, shelter. No tie-outs during natural disasters. Perhaps even a future addition could be, we give folks a grace period of 1 year. And then no tethering longer than 10 hours, which would basically be an adequate time for citizens to return home from work in the grocery store. Perhaps no tethering in extreme heat or cold above 90 degrees or below 32 degrees Fahrenheit. In closing, I am inspired by the people I see, talk to, read about, who have made changes and are enforcing these changes for the betterment of our animals. It takes everyone from investigators to the prosecutors to the community leaders for successful cruelty cases. But tragically, all of this usually occurs after an animal has suffered, been starved, neglected, abused. Everyone plays a role that matters. I want a county I can be proud of. Our residents deserve that. We deserve that. You deserve that. And I think we can do better. I know we can. Our communities deserve an improved animal ordinance. As a resident, this is one of my concerns. Bertie's Animal Control has only investigated 2 to 3 cases of animal cruelty this year. Martin and Hertford counties told me they had investigated that many last week. Animal cruelty has gone down in counties with good animal ordinances. People become invested. PETA put a billboard up that's also there in your handout on Highway 13 in Gates County after there was an animal cruelty case. This was in 2017. The case made regional headlines, like the case here in Bertie. But the dog died of a heat stroke because it had no sun. It had no shelter or shade or water in the summer sun. We can all agree that we don't want a billboard going up on Highway 17 like PETA put up in Gates County. We don't want our locals and visitors to have to see that. A pet is powerless against the ignorance and the poor judgments of their owners. Our animals need a voice, and I'll be their voice. I'd like to follow up with the board at your convenience. Pardon the pun, but I'm sort of like a dog with a bone when it comes to animal welfare. So, thank you for your time. And does anyone have any questions?
I don't have a question, Ms. Hathcott. We've spoken, and let me say this. I think we can do an awful lot better, but I think it's going to take not just legislation, that's a good thing, but it also is going to take some education.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's going to take more than one person, but a group of people who are willing to commit to do it. And the one thing that really surprises me, or I think the need is that there are funds out there available, and apparently we are not really taking, utilizing or looking for those kinds of dollars. And we need to, because if we're going to try to do this simply out of our budget, you know, we have struggled and finally been able to put money aside to make repairs, as I've told you.
Yes, sir.
To our animal shelter, mm-hmm. which is, we've needed to do that for a while. That's a big deal for us. But that does not change people's behavior with yep. their animals. So, you know, I mean, I would recommend to the board that we take seriously your offer to get involved. And if we can get a small group of people like yourself to work with local government, that means the commissioners, the sheriff, and citizens, everybody, we can make some progress here.
Yes, you know, I agree.
I can't tell you that everybody feels the same way you do. You've heard the other side of the story, right? But just like on this board, sometimes the best solution starts someplace in the middle and you make progress. So I just want us to move in a positive direction to improve the lives of animals.
Yes, sir.
And if you can help us do that, you know, I would love to see us take some action that will make that a possibility for us. So.
In Halifax County, they are completely anti-tethering, no tethering, period. Here in Bertie, I don't know that our folks can all pony up $180 for a 10 by 10 kennel. So what I've proposed is with the educational plan, hopefully we're meeting in the middle and it's feasible. And it doesn't mean people have to go out and spend that amount of money on a kennel because they might be hard pressed to do so. But maybe they could spend $25 on a proper tie out.
Ms. Northcott.
Yes, sir.
Beginning of the year, I had a meeting with Rachel Lapita. Mm-hmm. I believe Mr. Robertson was there, myself, the sheriff was there. And in that conversation, everything you said came up in conversation. And my statement to her was the key thing and the key issue here in Bertie County is education. I echo because this started probably at the beginning of the year.
Right.
And I explained to her, PETA just can't show up and start at the top, okay, and want us to pass ordinances, and who's going to enforce it at the bottom,
right,
okay? So the education piece is what's most important, okay? I told her at that time I would not be in favor of any ordinances until PETA came through and started going into classes, schools. They have been once probably to different elementary school or different elementary schools one time. But what it boils down to is the educational piece.
Yes, sir. You're
correct. I mean, in reality, I mean, I don't think it takes a lot to somebody to have to say a dog needs water. A dog needs food.
Okay? You would think not.
You would think not. But again, I commend the sheriff and the sheriff's department in reacting as quick as they can react on some of these things, because I have to tell you, I mean, you know, the state's attorney or district attorney's office and prosecuting and things of that nature, you're right. Some of these things don't happen and they don't get done. But as much as they have on their plate in taking care of the human resources, sure. and also attempting to take care of the animal resources also with two animal control officers in a 740 square mile area. And Rachel and I talk on a regular basis and we try to help her as much as we can. Okay, and do what we can. And a lot of these answers and questions she had about this case here were being answered within 24 to 48 hours. I have the text messages and emails to prove that. Okay, under the circumstances, it's horrible when you see any creature or animal being tortured or suffered in this way. But it all goes back to the education era.
Yes, sir.
And it has to start in the elementary schools and they have to take it home to the parents and things of that nature. That puppy in itself isn't cute after a year. Now it's a full-sized dog.
Right.
Okay. And they get stuck in certain situations. I just think that in the future, I think that we can work something. I just don't think it's as far as an ordinance at this time. I'll be honest with you. In my opinion, we have got to educate the community, because if we don't, then it's not going to happen at all. And I think this is probably the first time PETA has ever been in schools here in Bertie County mm-hmm. was this year. Has anybody else ever known them to be in any schools before or to go set up programs or come to some of our things to set up a table and hand out pamphlets and things of that nature.
I didn't know. I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't know that they were at the farmer's market and, yeah. and I get a list of, you mm-hmm. know, what vendors are going to be there.
Exactly.
And I saw them on there.
So how do they turn around and communicate that. A little bit better? And see, these are the things, you know, they're in Virginia. Okay. They want to come down here to Bertie County. All right. And I think that if they were communicating very well with the educational system, which I hope they are now, okay, maybe things will improve on their own, okay, and we can move forward from there. Thank you.
That would be great.
Beth, I would just like to say I appreciate your compassion for the animals. You know, I have a fur baby at home, and she's spoiled rotten, and she's air-conditioned ruined. But like I told PETA at the 4th of July, 3rd of July celebration, you cannot instill that compassion into some people. And unfortunately, you know, they go get this puppy and he's all cute and cuddly, and then they grow up. And the joy of having that animal leaves, and, you know, the compassion's not there. So whatever you can do to instill, if you can, you know, instill that compassion to people to take care of their animals better, than I'm all for it.
I've spoken to a few other animal advocates. I'm not a part of PETA. I'm just me.
Right.
And about joining an ad hoc committee, Mr. Wesson was in favor of, and if that's okay with the board, I would like to move forward with us forming some kind of ad hoc committee and reporting back to you guys in a couple of months at your, you know, whenever it's convenient for you, to see what, you know, what kind of educational plans we can come up with, because it will take coordinating with some school systems, you know, talking to folks.
Yeah, Bill, and another thing is just like echoing the commissioners what they said earlier. The school has job fairs, they have career days, they have a lot of different other activities, which is PETA and others. They could be out there and start at the ground root. What really makes a difference. Now, it's just like Commissioner Trent said, you know, at the top here, you know, then that's another expense and liability on the county and the sheriff's department. But let me tell you this, third, July the 9th, on a Saturday, on one of my properties, tenant left. I called the sheriff's department. Know how long it took them to get there? 5 minutes. Know what kind of dog it was? A pit bull. Very vicious. You know, and Officer Carl White done an outstanding job. Outstanding job. I can't thank him enough. I called the sheriff's department on Monday and spoke with his supervisor, Sheriff Holly, and let him know the outstanding job that the animal control done over the weekend, not during the weekday.
And that's a good point, because the ultimate solution to this is not prosecution. We can't prosecute ourselves out of this. Mm-mm. The sheriff department doesn't have time. We don't have personnel. We've got to be able to get citizens to understand that we have a problem and give them some practical solutions that can help, right?
Yes, sir.
And I think part of it is, you know, it's just like there's anything else. There are funds out there that we should be able to take advantage of, whether that's for education, whether that's for helping citizens actually get what they need in order to take care of an animal. If we think one is, you know, if they can't do it themselves, that's how we treat the hospital. When you go there and you don't have money to pay, they don't turn you away. They treat you, right? And we provide money for it. I have in the past, indigent care. We've got to organize and have a real structure. It starts with the education piece, but it doesn't end there.
Right.
So, yeah, I would welcome an opportunity or a group of folks who'd want to take that among themselves and work to try to find some solution. I think it makes sense.
Thank you. I'm going to take you up on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Northcott. Okay.
Kelly deal. Something came up.
guys seem to be working on it.
Joe Bloomquist, who was, I think, the head of, like, North Carolina Animal Welfare, he's asked me twice to go to the classes and get certified, and I don't know that I have the heart to see the bad side of it.
I know that I don't. Well, from being ex-law enforcement, you need to know the bad side of it to be able to enforce the good side of it. Because I had to say it.
A volunteer organization, if it worked before, and that sounds reasonable.
That sounds reasonable.
Okay.
People just,
grow. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Recreational complex request by Mr. Bonnie Jones. Mr. Bonnie.
Good evening. Good evening. Thank you, County Commission. I'm here today. I think this is the second time I've been here. I came here 6 years ago on the same subject here. This plan here, why we don't have a basketball court or a place to play football there at the recreation complex. When I left last time, chairperson was Trent, and and I asked you about it. About a month later, you told me that Mr. Weston was in charge. And I talked to Mr. Weston about what you're going to do about the basketball. You said, well, I'm working on trying to get the right cement concrete. You remember that, Mr. Weston?
Yeah, I do, in fact. What I said to you is that we had a plan. Scott Sauer was the county commissioner. We drew up a plan for a basketball court, and it was a very nice one with a
rubber
composite
mat,
surface and stuff like surface. That. But I've not been in charge of anything, Mr. Jones. I told you the plans that we had in place to do that. We have never had the funds, never committed the funds.
Okay. So we never had the funds for that.
No, we never committed. I didn't say we didn't have the funds. We can fund anything we believe that we can. We never committed the funds to the plan.
Okay.
That's the fact.
Okay.
If my memory serves me correctly, we were going to put it out at the recreational facility the woods
on the other
we were
side
gonna
of
cut
the
soccer woods.
Field. On the other side of the soccer field. Wooded space.
And I had talked to Mr. Vaughn about this the other day in reference to looking this subject up in reference to minutes on this, because I remembered it. Okay.
I remember it yesterday.
And I remember that it was and again, I'd like for the minutes or whatever, but make a long story short, I remember it going from back to county management to the recreation, okay? Because I thought they had brought some drawings and stuff like this that had the court that was not concrete. It had a rubberized
platform.
Yeah, it was cushioned deck. I'm going to call it deck, okay? It's a court, basketball court.
I understand.
Okay. And that's where it went from there. And at that stage, that's all I can tell you.
So
I'm going to say a little bit more and I'm going to finish with this. The plan was drawn up, even priced in terms of what it would cost, Mr. Jones. That was presented by the county manager, not this county manager, but that county manager. And this board took no action to pay for it. So we didn't do it. But let me say this to you. I'm in favor of what you said. I brought it up when I first came in 12 years ago, well, 10 years ago now. But here's the deal. They said, no, put a basketball goal up. Kids are going to come up there and tear them down. That's the excuse I first heard.
So that's but not there now.
No, let me finish now. Because wait a minute. At the same time, we were spending almost $10,000 a year repairing the field out there where kids were riding their ATVs over the field. But yet still, we couldn't put up a basketball goal. Fear of somebody tearing it down. The reason it's not there is because citizens need to say we want it and this board needs to pay for it. That's where I am.
I thank you for that, Mr. Weston. But my point is, I start for the chain of command. I called Ms. Mazzeo and asked her about it. She said when that compact was there, the plan was for a basketball goal. She said that was the plan. I said, what happened to it? She said, I don't know. You need to talk to the county commissioners about that. I said, so every complex I've been to and seen, they have a basketball goal. Bertie County, the only complex that I've been to that don't have a basketball goal. I just don't understand that. I really don't.
I would love to see us look for some grant money, maybe? There's got to be some grant money out there for this project. Because, or it'll have to wait until next budget season, because the cost of this project would be more than what we can deal with within our current budget. I mean, you know, we've passed our current budget.
Oh, okay. So what I'm saying, Ms. Lee, when I talked to Ms. Mazzell, she was telling me that this was already in the plan, in the budget when it first got there.
We've never budgeted.
It was in the plan when they put it there.
She put it
out. Oh, years ago.
When it was the recreation, in the plan about 15 years ago, I believe I'm right.
That's before all of our times.
That's when I said the argument came up that people came in and said, no, we don't want. It was in the plan. This is for Mr. Von Anybody. Mm-hmm. John and I first came on the board. Mm-hmm. It was in the plan. But citizens said, oh, people will tear it up. That's why we don't want it out there. People will tear it up and all this kind of stuff. And so it never went in. That's a stupid excuse.
Yes, it is.
At the same time, people, like I said, were spending almost $10,000 a year redoing the field because kids were riding the ATVs around. If you can do that, you mean you can't replace a basketball goal if somebody tears it down or a rim? It's just a matter of priority. Do we want it or don't we want it?
And I think at that time, the board said they wanted it. And that means the management needs to follow through with it and things of that nature.
So what happened 6 years ago? Everybody
can't answer that question.
Bleachers. Yeah. And
that's the reason these minutes. You
know, what happened 6 years
another
ago?
Another fire everybody come along and we were putting out that fire. And not your fire. Yeah.
Ms. Jones, I wasn't here during that time. But let's start all over and see, can we get goals at the recreation park now? Because it seemed like it means some milk. A bowl of milk got spilled.
Well, Mr. Ross, I appreciate that. But all I'm trying to say is this complex is for everybody in Bertie County.
Yeah, we understand.
Let's be for real now. Let's be for real. It's for everybody in Bertie County. And what we have out there, we have a baseball field, we have a soccer field, and we have a softball field.
Am I right? We do football too out there.
No, it can't be a football field because you ain't got no poles.
We do football. We do flag. I do know.
But the poles ain't
stable.
The semi-pro team couldn't play there because the poles weren't right. It wasn't wild enough.
We only do flag. That's
right. Yeah, it wasn't the right flag.
We do flag football.
But it's not a football field. It's a practice field out there. That's not a football field.
We play football out there.
Yeah, but it's a practice field for everybody to come practice. So my whole point is, Ms. Lee, we have a softball, baseball, and soccer. Let's be for real. Softball, baseball, and soccer. Football, NFL. Mm-hmm. We got 85% people black, right? Mm-hmm. Baseball, NBA. Baseball, we have how many people black playing there? 25%. Softball, 20%. Soccer, 10%. So let's just think about what we have out there. We got to do this set and think. And this is the minority county of blacks, 70% of black folks. So why we don't have a baseball field, a football field and a basketball? It's just something wrong with that picture. It just point blank. It ain't no if and but. We thought about it. We did it. We talked about it. It's not right. And y'all know it. Y'all know it. I ain't got to tell you about it. You know this.
No, we agree.
When I came here the last time, y'all knew it, but you never took no action. You drawed it up, but no action was taken. Oh, so you made me feel good when I asked you about it. You drawed it up. Okay, you drawed it up. 6 years later, it's still being drawn up, but it ain't been built. It's not right. And you know it's not right. I want to know the people that came in here.
I don't remember what the estimate was.
I want to know the people that came in here and said they didn't want it. That's what I need to talk to. Scott, they didn't want it.
That was
the problem. Scott, I'm not blaming Scott. I'm saying what he drew up for us was a place with bleachers, with a composite surface that was the Cadillac. Yes. That's not even what citizens asked for. They said, we need a place. We could have started with a slab, some place for people to sit, and some nice goals. We could play. We could have started with that.
Talking about basketball court?
Tim Baseball built one down at City Landing Church on the Zodis.
50,000 to 60,000. Yeah.
I contacted a recreation director, Donna Mazzell, and asked her to get me some information. And she said she had a file on it. And she sent me a quote from 2015 that has totals $46,375.
That was a Cadillac, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. It included.
If that's
see.
If 46,000,
but that was 2015.
And that was 2015.
Right. Something great for 25.
Yeah, that included clear and grub and wooded area, debris hauled off site, grade sand pad for concrete, sand put in place, graded and compacted, and then the thick fiber reinforced concrete slab and the slick finish. For a total of 46.
It's going to be more than that now. I mean,
that's the reason I said 60,000.
But all I ask is let's be fair with it. You know, we vote y'all in for y'all to be fair. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about. Being fair. That's all we ask for. Mm-hmm. But it's not fair.
Mr. I've been Jones, here
6 years ago and it still ain't happened. That's not fair.
Yeah. Mr. Jones, I won't round 6 years ago, but I highly recommend that we can ask the county manager to speak with Donna, see can we get grant money in to go ahead and implement, put the goal, everything in place now. You know, I want, like I said, you know, for yourself, I was around then, but we all do want, and we agree with you. You know what I mean? So let's move forward and don't look back.
I understand that.
I mean, Frank, there are many ways to do this. A lot of communities, what they've done is say, okay, it's going to cost $50,000 as citizens and businesses to put money into towards it, to do it. It's all a matter of will. Do we want to do it or don't we want it? It's been on our plate.
That's what I'm here for. Do we want to do it?
Yes.
Let's
do it.
County manager,
let's make it happen.
Somehow or none. We're going to make it happen, Frank. We're going to make it happen.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to make this happen. And
I can't go out there and build it myself. I can't go out there and build it myself.
I understand. I can't either. I really can't. I really can't. But I'm sure we can work together and move forward.
Anything to get the boys and ladies something to do and keep them out of trouble, I'm all for it.
Let's go to the state championship.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. play. But they ain't got a place to play in the community other than when they can get into the gym.
Yeah, but we got the gym. If they're busy, they can play in. But we got to go too much red tape to get the gym to get the key. Why can't we just go out here and just play?
But you can't mm-hmm. start playing in the gym. You got to start playing on the court.
That's where it used to be. That's where it used to be back in the day.
And we'll have another Kent Bazemore come around.
We never know.
Never know.
I appreciate y'all time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Make it happen. Okay. Tall Glass Water Capacity Building Update. Project Manager, Robin Payne.
Waiting patiently.
Okay. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
All right. Tall Glass of Water, phase one. Second bid opening is scheduled for July 26th next week. We'll let everyone know how that goes. Web page has been updated for Tall Glass of Water. We felt that was important because we've got a lot of things going on, a lot of people that are interested. They want to know what all the updates are for phase one, phase two, the wetlands. Let's see, phase two, Land and Water Conservation Fund grant was submitted last Friday. We went ahead and submitted for $500,000 towards the project. And then we will move forward with our next steps for the funding plan for phase two once we finalize phase one. At the request of Dr. Bo Dame at Chowan University, his group is partnering with UNC Institute of Marine Science and the Chowan Edenton Environmental Group on a study of air water quality interactions. And they asked if when Tall Glass of Water is ready, they could put an air monitor up. we said, fine, we're not ready yet. But in the meantime, David Scarborough has offered his house to go ahead and have this small monitor going up. The monitors are placed, you know, tip of the Chowan coming down. So it'll be interesting to see what they find for that. Travel and tourism. Steve and I continue our training with Department of Commerce. We have our next training in Boone for 2 days next week. And Destination by Design has been working with the Branding Steering Committee on a survey to send to the public. We will run it for 30 days. This is a part of the advertisement that will go out on Facebook. We'll send it out to all of Bertie's staff first, all of our municipalities, and you know, get all of us informed first. And the survey will be posted on destinationbertie.com. It's a you know, web-based platform. And then I talked to Mr. Spivey, the water department, and we will have reminders going out 2 times to citizens at the bottom of the water bill. And it will say, you know, we need your community feedback. It's about economic development, travel and tourism. Visit destinationbertie.com. So
going on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
in the paper,
we'll send it all out to you all. And then, of course, the steering committee will, the school, and we'll ask if you all go ahead and share.
Yeah. Robin, we've got a great new reporter here in Bertie. His name is John Foley, F-O-L-E-Y. He's on the call right now.
Oh, okay.
So, John, if you're there, we could, and I see him now. This, we need to get the word out about what we're doing with this program. It's an essential piece of our ecotourism. So Robin Payne, who's here speaking, she's the contact person. Mm-hmm. John, reach out to her so we can leverage the media, not just Bertie, but the local papers, whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yep, sounds good. Coastal resiliency, I was going to update real quick. The $45,000 grant that we received for phase 3 to move forward, that is for engineering / specifications for flood control, Kashai River, moving down to Windsor. So our next step is for the planning department, Vic Thompson, all of us to sit down. Hopefully Dr. Riggs will be able to join. His report, of course, on the flooding issues in Bertie has provided so much feedback already that we'll be able to look at each intersection, each problem point, and then decide whether it needs simple nature-based specifications or if it needs a full-blown engineering in certain areas. So that's how we're going to tackle that. Once all of that information is put in place, we'll be able to come up with an estimate, and that's when we can apply to phase 4 for the Office of Recovery and Resiliency. So, no, I was talking about North Carolina created a division, Office of Recovery and Resiliency, 20 counties that have flooding issues. And there were a series of engineering assessment, and then engineering teams went out, or consultants, to assess each county's issues. And so for Bertie County, Windsor had a consultant that addressed their main, you know, high priority issues. And then the rest of Bertie County had the same consultant. So it's, I can send you the link, but they've identified, based on feedback from citizens, the emergency management, and of course, all the different reports that have been done, what the priority spots are for dealing with flooding.
Areas like Long Branch, actually down at 308 School Road.
You know, right.
Areas like at the back up. Yeah. South Windsor on 17.
She didn't raise her hand and change subjects.
What?
I'm just messing with you, Rob.
Did I misunderstand your question? Okay. So it's a long list of flooding issues. We can't tackle all of them, but we'll tackle the ones where we can see the most impact first. And the good thing about the report that was done for phase two is that if a community wants to go out, or if the board wants, needs to go for funding for some other issue, you know, we've got that report that's there. So that preliminary research. So, well, we'll update you as we know more information. So do you have any questions?
I hope you have reservations next week, because the Little League All-Stars are in Boone next week.
We do. We do. Yeah, we've actually got the course ends in October. So yeah, we're thinking ahead. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Rob. All right, financial summary by Finance Director William Robertson. It's hot.
First, I'd like to start out by saying each one of you received a packet on your desk. Some of you were in here, some weren't. It's basically the auditor's fraud letter and related party letter. I'll get a chance to fill them out. You can scan them in and email them back, or you can mail them back either way. I appreciate you taking care of that for me. This is for June. You'd expect this to be close to 100% for expenses. And if you look down the list, a lot of areas are close to 100%, but nobody is over. So we've done a good job in keeping everything in check. If you noticed, I've got green comments up here in the revenue. I've done an estimate on the outstanding revenue that I'm still expecting to come in. I've kind of estimated what they are and plugged them in, so it would kind of give us a comparable number. You'll see that the total revenue was $30,806,000. My expense is $30,636,000. That's about $170,000 going back to the fund balance.
Right.
I also want to point out that in the expenditures, we have $100,000 encumbered, which basically says I have POs out there that may or may not have to be paid. Sometimes we'll put one in for like 12 months, like $100 a month. And when we get to the end of the year and finally make the final payment, we'll probably release some of that money to go back. So I'm anticipating about $40,000 to go back. So realistically, I'm looking at about $200,000 going back to the fund balance. Percentage-wise, I got ready to start looking at that. I got very bogged down in trying to look at it. It's too many moving parts right now. I still don't have a firm answer. I still would venture to say my 9 to 10% is my best guess estimate, which is an improvement from before. So overall, I think it's looking better.
Make Ms. Woods happy.
On the backside, you'll see that water, the sales of water really came in strong. And that's looking good as well. So I think it all looks favorable at the moment. Any questions?
Great job.
Okay. All right, thank you. Just hopefully.
I'm shooting with all of us sitting in front of each
other. Yeah. That's all right.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Robertson. Board appointments. Reappointing the CPTA board, Mr. L.C. Hoggard.
I make a motion we approve Mr. Hoggard.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Appointment to the Trillium board, Dr. Patricia Wesson.
I made the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Consent agenda. Approved registered deeds report for June 2022.
recommend the approval of the register of deeds report for June.
Second.
We have a first and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Approve minutes for budget public hearing, June 6th, 2022.
Make a motion. We approve the minutes for the budget hearing, 6-6-22.
One question. County manager, was that the one where suggested a little swift in the wording? Are you going to be able to?
Yes, sir. I did. Okay.
When I read it, I knew that's what it was, but only because we had, you know, mm-hmm. But citizens, if they had just read it that way, probably would not have understood, thought it would have been all of that going to simply quote nonprofit. So thank you.
Yes, sir.
So anybody was a motion already?
Yes.
Second, need, if not already second.
Was there a first? I knew you gave.
I did the first.
You did first?
Second.
Okay, we have a first and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Approve iWorkQ service agreement.
Yes, this service agreement is for the inspection software that was approved in this year's budget, and our attorney Jonathan Huddleston has reviewed it and actually provided some feedback to iWork, who has made the recommended changes. So I believe Mr. Attorney Huddleston would approve that we that the or recommend that the board approve it as included.
Yeah, motion, please.
I make the motion and approve the iWorkQ service agreement.
Second.
A motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Upcoming meetings, July 21st to the 24th is NACO conference in Colorado. We have three representatives going, I believe.
Two.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Ms. Lee and Mr. Wesson. Mr. Wesson is a voting delegate for us once he gets there. The next is July 28th, 2022 at 3 p.m. Meet the great Bertie High School. Meet and greet the Bertie High School for Principal Jonathan Matthews.
I have met him. He is pretty great.
And 4th and 5th, 2020, August 4th through the 5th, 2022, ALC Ambassador Program. And August 11th through the 13th, 2022, the NCACC Conference in August.
Cabarrus County.
Absolutely. Did they ever get the room squared away?
I would defer to LaShonda, clerk.
Currently, Chair Trent, they're working on the rooms right now as we speak. I'm waiting for an email actually to come through to either tonight or tomorrow.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Commissioner's reports. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you,
sir. Mr. Wesson.
Yeah, I just have a couple of things. First of all, looking forward to the NACO session. I think there's some great things to see what other counties are doing across the country and get a chance to bring some ideas back to Bertie. So thank you, citizens, for allowing us to go. I had the pleasure of, on July the 7th, to attend a presentation by the Bertie County NAACP, who presented 10 books to Bertie County Library. And the title of that book was Who Are Your People? By best-selling author Bakari Sellers. A lot of you might recognize that name. Bakari Sellers was a political commentator on MSNBC for several years. But he also one time started out like us as county commissioner back in his home state of South Carolina. He was the youngest state legislator elected in the history of South Carolina and the youngest African-American legislator in the whole nation. The book is tremendous. He has a tie to Bertie County. Miss Hattie Outlaw is a relative, and she invited him to be the keynote speaker on April the 1st to the NAACP Freedom Banquet. And he packed the house. It was a sellout. He was a great speaker, very encouraging to this community. He knows rural coming from South Carolina. And it was very inspiring. So we made the presentation and 10 books presented to the library. And
the librarians there were delighted to have it. We took a picture, we've given that to the press, and we, you know, just a great thing. The NAACP had already given, I think, 3 scholarships just 2 months before. So to follow up with the books to the library was a really great thing. So I wanted to congratulate them on doing what they did. That's it for me.
Good. Thank you, Ms. Lee.
To appreciate the opportunity to go to Colorado, and I'll be attending the National Association of County Board of Directors meeting. We have 3 different meetings while we are there, so I'll be busy with all that. I've already informed the commissioners, but I serve on Albemarle Regional Health Board, the executive board, and we got word actually while I was in Alaska on the mission trip that our health director will be retiring and leaving as of the 28th, I believe, of this month. So we will be conducting interviews next week. We have 3 great potential health directors, and so we're excited about all that. And anyway, so just wish us well and hope that we get the best candidate out there. So thank you.
Okay. Mr. Robertson.
Well, Chairman Trent, I'd like to say that at this moment, I'm very, very tickled and pleased that we have department head, Mr. Spivey, and Ms. Robin Payne could get together and work where that we could get the word out for the tall glass of water. It says a lot about their character. You know, it says a lot how department head and Ms. Payne can get together. And I wish and hope that every department head would pitch in and work with Ms. Robin Payne so the tall water glass can be a very big success in Bertie County. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson. County manager's report.
I have just a couple of quick things, Chairman. The first thing is, as some of you already know, last Thursday, we attended the mayor's and commissioner's dinner in Powellsville, and USDA Executive Director Reginald Spate was there and provided a great summary or overview of the programs that they have in USDA. And he also had the opportunity to hear from the county as well as the municipalities in Bertie County about some concerns that we have. And I'm interested in getting with a couple of commissioners. Commissioners Trent and Wesson mentioned something that Executive Director Spate asked me to write a letter to him about to inform him and his staff about that. So I look forward to following up on that. But I wanted the public to know that that was a very informative and productive meeting. And lastly, I would like to thank my former commissioner and senator, Bazemore. It is my understanding that a number of projects that were submitted through her for the state budget were funded. And just want to thank her for that. And we look forward to receiving those funds and getting those projects done. So thank you very much to Senator Bazemore.
Thank you, Senator.
That's all I have.
If I have the instructions for the state policy around that matter, if you'd like, I can send it to you.
Certainly. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Is that all?
Yes, sir.
Okay. County attorney's report. Mr. Huddleston, you have anything?
No, sir.
Okay. Shonda, public comments?
No, sir. None at this time.
Okay. This time, I'd like to have a motion for us to go into closed session.
Make a motion that we go into closed session. Under, do you have the
is it the 143.318 11A 3, 4, and 5?
As stated by Commissioner Lee.
I'll take that as a second.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody have anything else? Sure. LaShonda.
Yes.
Waiting room.
One person's coming back in. They're in now.
Adjourn.
Adjourn, not rejourn.
Yeah,
no second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.